Welcome to Let's Talk About It, co-hosted by Maria Wyatt and Scott Dudley. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com.
Good morning, Imperial Valley. You are listening to your weekly wellness radio, Let's Talk About It, with Scott and Maria. Our phone number here at the station is 337-8874, and we are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health and KUBO 88.7 Radio Bilingue. It's been a while.
Where are we? What happens next?
I'm back.
It's the whole show is doing that.
I know.
It's too funny. Welcome. Good morning. Thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in. Let's get you some. I know why you tuned in. You tuned in because you want to hear wellness radio. So let's get there. Okay. So we have Patricia Arevalo, right? Did I like totally butcher the name?
No, you did really good, Scott. I'm very proud of you. Thank you.
Trying to get it together.
A for Arevalo. Yes, thank you.
Thank you. And she's program supervisor, and she supervises one of the really key elements of behavioral health because it's an
the well, door.
The door.
The door to
the
behavioral health.
The front door.
The front door.
And we're going to talk all today about assessment / crisis services because it really is an important element of what we do, and we get the gatekeeper.
Oh my goodness, I feel so important. Thank
now,
you.
Now you are also, by way of experience, you're also a licensed vocational nurse or
licensed psychiatrist.
Oh, even better. What in the mental health world? What do those people do?
Well, licensed psych techs, we're very few and far between, so we're very...
A dying breed.
Yes, we are. There's not too many of us at behavioral health. We have more licensed vocational nurses at behavioral health, but they function basically as a nurse. They do the initial nursing assessments, which is where they develop goals, talk to the patients about what their plan is going to be or what the plan is for their treatment at behavioral health. They assist the doctor with medications, medication support. They have sessions with the clients to help them out, to talk to them about their medications and how to take them properly and those kind of things. They refer them for labs prior to the initial psychiatric assessment so that the patient is, we have a good picture of what's going on with them before the doctor prescribes medication.
As a licensed psychiatric technician, then I'm just because it's in the title, I'm assuming that there's some specialized training in mental health stuff.
Yeah, we do, as opposed to a vocational nurse, we do more psychiatric. We do more on the mental retardation, more on the syndromes that are associated with mental retardation. Excuse me, and a lot of the illnesses mm-hmm. that the mental health illnesses, the bipolar, the schizophrenia, all the other depressive disorders, everything. We touch on those when we're going to school, as opposed to the vocational nurse, who's a little bit more medical. We're more psychiatric. We deal more with the field that of mental health.
I'm betting that experience comes into play in crisis assessment.
Oh, it does. It does. It really helps.
Especially at the crisis.
Especially at the crisis. I also function as a nurse there, so they got twofold with me. But we have a lot of really good nurses at behavioral health, and their expertise is unparalleled by anybody. We're really good. We're really good at what we do.
Cool. So let's, I guess, talk about what you do.
Yes. So the assessment center.
Assessment
crisis center.
The assessment center is where a person can go in and get a pre-screening. They can walk in just as a walk-in, 8 to 5, Monday through Friday, excluding weekends, holidays. And what they do is, they're having a crisis or they feel that they're having an issue and they want to talk about it. So we can go in there and we ask them a few questions. Probably takes about 15 minutes or so. And we can kind of assess their needs. We can see if they need to go to the crisis department, if they can, schedule an appointment for a regular intake. And we can give them some techniques maybe to help de-escalate the problem that they're having, maybe talk about some community resources. We have a resource list that we usually give them so that they can use that tool for any future need. And so it takes 15 minutes or so. I mean, it can take longer. It can take shorter.
Basically, walk-in basis, right?
Walk-in basis. It's free. You don't have to.
There's no wait or.
I mean, if we have a lot of patients or people that are in front of them, but usually no. And if there is, there's probably about a 5 or 10 minute wait. And if it's usually the wait is because we're having to get somebody pull somebody from crisis to go over to the assessment center to do the pre-screening.
Sure. And but no big mounds of paperwork.
No, no, they don't have to do any paperwork other than give us their name and why they're there, and that's
any cost?
It.
Any
nope.
cost?
There is no cost, absolutely none. They walk in, we don't do any financials on them or anything like that. They walk in, they give us the few bits of information that we need. That's it.
So in 15 minutes, we have some way of telling whether it's a mental health problem that they may be able to manage some other way, or it's a mental health problem that they really might need our level of support, the behavioral health level of support.
Right.
Or some other problem to which we would provide them with the list of resources and kind of point them on the page and say, yeah, it's probably this one.
Exactly. And, you know, sometimes we get people that are, they go in and they're homeless and they want the resources. They don't really want mental health assistance, but they want to know what they can do. And so we give them a list of say, shelters or, you know, and point them in the right direction. Sometimes people need to make a phone call to a family and a member or something like that, and we can assist them with that also. I mean, that's to help them get over this situation that they're in at that moment.
Nice. How long has that been something that's been kind of a part of the culture for a while there?
It's been around for quite some time, and it's worked really well, because if people are coming in and they want, sometimes they feel that they're in crisis. And,
sure.
And so we can.
I get,
you know,
to call it a crisis.
Yeah.
It's my life. Okay.
Yeah. And we can kind of give them some interventions, some techniques on how to deal with this crisis, so that next time they go through it, they know how to deal with the situation. And just some interventions and kind of help calm them along, or make an appointment for them, or refer them over to the crisis desk because they are in imminent need or in imminent danger.
But this is a good, I mean, good information, not just for the people that might, for anyone actually.
Yeah.
Anyone can go through a crisis at any time.
Yes, exactly.
See, if you're driving around this morning and you're like, whoa, my life's really taking a weird turn here. I might need some help.
No, I mean,
you can just pull in.
Yeah.
They can go
yeah.
to 202 North 8th Street here in El Centro.
Three-story building, brown building.
Yes, exactly. And it's the door closest to 8th Street, and they can just walk on in there and say, I'm here, and I need to see somebody.
Do people come and actually seek that specific service, or do they come and say, I'm not sure what's going on, or is this the right place? Or
mm-hmm. Yeah, we get a little bit of that. They come in, they're just kind of looking since our...
But that's good. I mean,
yeah,
that's good, just having just walk in or... You know, open that door.
Yeah.
That's a good.
And so they can come in 8 to 5, like I said, and just, you know, even if they just need to vent a little bit, you know, sometimes people need that. You just don't know, you know. We want to prevent getting any escalating. So if we can prevent them, give them some tools, give them some techniques.
Well, I mean, that's good, because I'm just thinking about somebody going through a crisis. Like Scott said, you're driving around and then you start to think about stuff. And,
it's,
you know,
really starting to add up here.
Yeah, exactly. No, exactly. And I can call my general practitioner, but that, you know, that means either I have to wait in the office all day because I don't have an appointment as a walk-in, or sometimes I don't even take walk-ins now. They're just so full that, so can I, what if you can't deal with it? You don't know those interventions.
Talking,
you don't know how to be able to cope
with my mother-in-law, but then she's going to tell everybody.
Yeah, so.
I'll be the next Thanksgiving story.
You know, to go to clinicas or go to your doctor, it's you have to make an appointment. Or either just wait all day, which I have, or just go to behavioral health.
Yeah. Or you can use our toll-free number.
Oh, that's good.
That's 1-800-817-5292.
Will you pre-screen over the phone?
We don't do pre-screenings over the phone. What we do is we just talk to the people. We don't ask those. We'll ask the specific questions, but it's not on the actual form. And at that
it's
time,
like pre-screen.
yeah. No kidding. And so, you know, if it's after hours, then we'll just have them walk into our clinic. Or if we feel that the person's in imminent danger,
yeah.
we will call. You know, and get them in.
Yeah.
To us.
Neat. How many of those more or less you get a day? I feel like the 50-minute screening thing.
I would say an average of probably 4 to 5 a day.
Cool.
Average. Yeah. Some days are really hectic. Some days are very slow.
Now, are these people who, I know one of the things Behavioral Health has done is it's really kind of proactively tried to reduce stigma and shame in the community. And now we have lots of advertising. We have this radio show. We have lots of ways of just kind of reaching out and saying, this is a normal part of human life. It happens to some people sometimes. And there's good help available. How much of that do you think pays off in people coming in to do this little 15-minute screen thing?
Well, I think anything to destigmatize the...
I was sitting in the bus stop, and I saw your little sign about depression, and I realized I was sitting the same way the girl was.
That was a really cool advertising stand. We try not to... You know, everybody has issues. We all have issues. We all need somebody to talk to. So if they can go in and help themselves out, hey, it's all for the best.
Mario Espinoza, the executive producer of our radio show, does not have issues.
He's no, lucky. But, you know, just you can prevent, you know, just having this access, easy access, yeah, easy and fast access to behavioral health, to mental health. You can prevent.
Yeah, where else can you go to get 50 minutes of
free
professional advice?
Yeah, exactly. You know,
free professional advice.
But, I mean, you can, maybe somebody out there, you know, is listening to this radio or they know of somebody. And, you know, going in there can prevent tragedies.
Yeah.
And you know, statistics say 1 out of 4 adults in any given year are suffering diagnosable and treatable symptoms of mental health disorders. So, hey, you know.
1 in 4.
1 in 4.
Yeah. Wow, we're 4 here right now.
And
so.
It's not Mario. And it's not Mario.
It's not Mario, so it's us. Well, I guess we work in the right place.
Stop staring at me. Right? So, okay, and so if they need, let's take this a step farther. Someone comes in for their 15-minute screening, and let's say it's not a crisis. Let's say the best for last, right?
Okay.
But let's say it does really appear that they may have signs and symptoms of a treatable mental health disorder that kind of fits within the criteria of what you do at Behavioral Health.
So we would set them up for an intake assessment, which is the first step of our 3-step process. And we would set them up for an intake. We have clinicians in Brawley, El Centro, they can do intake assessments, and Winter Haven. And then after they get the intake, they get screened in, and then they get set up for the nursing assessment. And then after that, they get set up for the psychiatric. Now, sometimes there's issues where times where the psychiatrist isn't going to prescribe medication. I mean, but for the most part, yeah. That's what happens. That's our 3-step process.
Well, typically they'll pick like the best intervention they think for whatever they think they're seeing.
Yeah.
Correct?
Yeah.
I mean, that makes sense. That's the way doctors work, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, I just want to let people know that you know, we have a 3-step process, and that's our system. And, you know, people go through this, and, you know, there's people guiding them every step.
Now, at that point, there is paperwork, and there is payee stuff, and you've entered the health system.
Exactly.
Yes, yes. And it's done once at the beginning, so you don't have to do paperwork every single time. You don't have to do the same financial stuff every single time. It's once,
by
and
helpful,
that's it.
Wonderful people that are...
Our access department, the girls are really great.
Sure.
They, you know, they're...
Bilingual?
Yes. Yes, I should throw that out. Yes. They are bilingual, bicultural.
Well, and I would say even going a step beyond that is they're really specifically talented in helping somebody get through a difficult process anyway.
Yeah.
When they're in distress. Yeah. When they're having, because people with diagnosable and treatable symptoms of a mental health disorder typically aren't feeling like doing piles of paperwork.
No, and the paperwork is very streamlined. There's just a few pieces of paper, and they're not going to make it more difficult, and they're not going to make it hard to access services. They are very helpful. They want people. I mean, we all want to help people. Mm-hmm. That's why we're there.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Neat. So, okay, so we come in, we get our paperwork cleared up, how many months do I have to wait before my intake assessment?
A few months.
No, not even a week. We
Come
have
on.
seven working days at the very most. And, you know, we're pretty quick. We can get people in really, really quick. You know, that's part of our plan. That's part of our mental health plan. So we get people in and get them into that first step. So they're there. They've met medical necessity. Now they're going to go to their team. we are assigned teams in adult services by their geographic location, by their diagnosis. So, you know, we have clinics, like I said, in Brawley. So that serves the north end. We have El Centro clinics. We have two in El Centro and one in Winter Haven. So that's the adult population.
It occurs to me that worked out really well, because if the Brawley clinic were actually serving the people in Calexico, that would be kind of a bad
move. Yes.
You know? So way to line those up.
Yeah. And then Children's also has clinics in Brawley, Winter Haven, Calexico. They have a clinic in Calexico and El Centro.
Mm-hmm. And so people get routed depending on their geographic location.
And diagnosis, yeah.
Yes. Now, can they enter through those clinics, or do they have to enter through the 8th Street building?
No, if they want to enter through the Brawley clinic, they can. I mean,
and so you're the front door, but there's some side doors.
Yeah, there's some side doors.
Yeah, they can if they want
Winter Haven. If they go to Winter Haven,
they can.
They don't need to come over here.
No, they don't. You know, it's probably a little bit faster coming through the assessment center. But, you know, yeah, we do, especially if transportation is an issue, you know, and that is for a lot of people.
If I live in Winter Haven, it's actually not a 15-minute screening.
No.
It's like a 2.5-hour screening.
It's an all-day. Uh-huh. It's an all-day.
Yeah.
Especially if you have a lot of cars in the checkpoint.
Or you're riding the bus or whatever, you know.
Yeah. You know, so it's helpful to have clinics all over. And that's the nice thing that Behavioral Health has done, is we spread out our services.
Nice. So you do assessments right there, huh?
Yes, we do intake assessments. If it's something that's urgent and we have an opening, we can put them in right there.
What kind of stuff does an intake assessment determine? You mentioned that's the first step of a three-step process. What kind of stuff gets cleared up by the intake assessment?
The intake assessment is just kind of it's more in-depth. We ask about family. We ask about, you know, past drug and alcohol problems, issues, their history, any mental health treatment, any medications, those kind of things. We kind of gather all this information so that it's useful for the next process to determine goals of the client, and then so that the doctor can have a good, well-rounded history of the client, so that when he...
There's a lot of context involved in mental health diagnosis, isn't there? I mean, it's like, you know, diabetes, take your test, see your sugar tolerance.
There it is.
Bam,
yeah,
there it is.
There's the number.
You're there. But with mental health, it's kind of like, well, you know, we got to look at how your life has been.
Right.
And look at what kind of stuff is happening to you and what kind of stuff's going on in your mind. And from all of that, kind of put it together and put together not only a diagnosis, but a way to get people better.
Yeah, and then that's our ultimate goal, is to get them better so that they can go back and do whatever they did.
So no blood sugar test for depression.
No.
That's probably in the other steps.
Yeah, I mean, once they see the nurse is going to order some blood work, and most especially if they haven't had any for a long time. And we do notice that a lot of people don't have yearly physicals and blood work and that kind of stuff, so... They want to make sure that they're...
I'm too busy getting my oil changed every 3 months, all right?
I know. and it's just so that when they prescribe medication, they know what's going on with them. So that's good.
You know, it's one way to really get odd stares from people is to walk in and say, "Hi, I'm here just for a checkup to see if everything's okay." And the health professional will look at you like, "What?
Yeah, what are they doing here?
You need a presenting symptom. You need something
off with you. You need to be sick to be here."
Back of the line.
When I was younger, I did that all the time. But now that I'm older,
when I really need it,
I don't do it anymore. Yeah, I'm too scared to find out what might be there. You know.
And as a medical professional, you absolutely have no.
No, I don't. Is the doctor diagnosed myself or nurse diagnosed myself? So
they get this assessment, and it is complex, because it isn't as simple as just giving you some sort of physiologically determined test, and you score a certain number, and that indicates a pathology, something wrong, a disease.
And that must be, I mean, going through that process, I mean, you have to be, the person doing the assessment has to be aware of the person that's presented himself, because that maybe some people don't remember. You know, and it's very important to get as much information as you can, and accurate information.
You're very
and
right.
Sometimes people don't even know what today's date is. You know, they might be presenting other symptoms.
You're very
also.
Right. And
besides the mental health, might be other. You know.
You're very right. Our clinician, Dr. Lewis Blumberg, at the Assessment Center, is a PhD, and he has been around for many, many years, and he's, you know, really good at digging those kind of things out. You know, kind of giving. Asking questions so that he can dig a lot of information and get information. And sometimes people bring in their family members, which is really helpful, so that in case the client, you know, who's maybe feels on the spot, doesn't remember things, maybe the family member can say, yeah, remember this and remember that, and give more of a history. The intake assessment can take anywhere from 45 to 90 minutes. So, you know, it's pretty complex. It's pretty intense. You know, we want to get a good history. We want to know if there's been any treatment history, what has worked before, what hasn't worked, those kind of things. So, yeah, it's you're right. You're very right.
But how many assessments do you guys do, a week or day or...?
With us,
try and keep them busy, I'm assuming.
Yeah, since they're about 90 minutes, we probably schedule about 5 to 6 a day. Sometimes people don't show up to their appointments, and we have a lot of that. But I would say probably easily 30 to 40 assessments are done in a month. Sometimes it's higher, sometimes it's lower.
And that's just average. Your location.
That's just
202 North 8. We still have our Brawley clinics, our Winter Haven clinics, our El Centro clinic. You know, we still have those clinics that do them too. So we do bring a lot of people into our system.
Kind of interesting to think that in any given month, 250 maybe. Local residents, community residents, people, friends and neighbors and ourselves, are concerned enough about their mental health that they come in and get an assessment.
Yeah.
And that we have the people there and the staffing there and the government agency support and taxpayer support necessary to manage that at this point in time in a fairly effective way. I mean, less than a 7-day wait for an assessment sounds pretty good.
That's pretty good. Yeah.
Okay, top of the hour. Let's talk about it. We're here with Pat Arevalo. She's program supervisor at the Crisis Assessment Unit. We're talking about the front door to behavioral health services. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back with the rest of the show.
You're listening to the complete podcast version of Imperial County's Behavioral Health Service, Let's Talk About It, brought to you by KXORadio.com.
Welcome back. You are still listening to Let's Talk About It, your weekly wellness radio with Scott and Maria. We are brought to you by Imperial County Behavioral Health and KUBO 88.7 Radio Bilingue. And here are our phone number at the station is 337-8874. Don't forget the 760 area code. And you can also access this show through our podcast at kxoradio.com.
And we're counting the number of hits on our sites, so let's, like, every
time
you do that.
Oh, we have a site?
Every time you do that, we feel, like, a little more friended. So we appreciate that. It kind of validates our existence.
You know what? You need to make an account for a Facebook account.
I'm kidding, because I've been reading all this stuff on narcissism lately, and people get validated by, like, how many friends they have or how many likes they get on something.
Oh, well, geez, I guess I'm...
So it's all about us now.
Suicidal then,
it's all about us. It's all about us now.
I don't have a Facebook account, so...
Nobody's liking your posts? Come on.
No, not at all.
You know, for 15 minutes, I could actually let you know whether that's a mental health problem.
Or I can check in so people know exactly where I'm at all the time. You haven't seen that on Facebook?
Yes.
That's kind of scary.
Mario's carrying his GPS tracking device right now in his hand, called an iPhone.
Yeah, they're tracking you.
1,000 times a minute asks itself,
they know
where am I? Where am I?
You were.
And then it puts the data in a hidden file that, you know, law enforcement can later look at. And say,
exactly. That's where you've been.
This is where Mario's phone was, hanging out. Welcome back. 337-8874 is the phone number. We're here with Pat Arevalo. She is the program supervisor for the Crisis Assessment Unit. She's a licensed psychiatric technician.
Wow.
Which brings a plethora, a virtual plethora of mental health experience. You had to do your training in a state hospital, right?
I mean, yes.
Wow.
That's old school, huh? They didn't have state hospitals.
They still have a few.
Like one.
We did ours at Patton State Hospital many, many years ago.
General George Patton.
This was many years ago. It was a beautiful hospital. I mean, beautiful grounds and stuff like that. And we spent our summer there, which was not a bad deal. You know?
And you can imagine, I mean, when you say state hospital, it's just, you know, psychiatric state hospital, just, you're looking at, you know, just what you imagine. You know, everybody locked up and,
you know, it's not as bad as people think. I mean, it is what it is. It is a state hospital where people that have had failures in placement.
Probably for most of us, our state hospital experiences, some of us saw the movie One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and that we're going to kind of go to there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, that's that's kind of back in those days, but things are very different now. I mean, people, just like everything evolves, state hospitals have evolved also. I mean, we still have checkered floors, but we have, you know, it's not as bad.
Are the
as
walls
it is.
Painted in soothing colors? Like here?
Painted? They're light colors, yeah. You don't have a lot of bright colors, but it is what it is. I mean,
California, I don't know about other states, but California certainly has adopted a different kind of mental, kind of more like community integration model of mental health, and you're really a key role in that.
Yeah, and clients, you know, we have a preconception that clients, you know, walk around with this Thorazine shuffle and that kind of stuff. Clients are, you know, we don't do that anymore. We don't have clients on those kind of medications. There's so many new medications
and
out
improved.
There. Yeah, and that have come out within the last few years, the atypicals and so. You know, we don't have a lot of those side
That would
effects.
Be a good name for a band, now that I think about
you
it.
You mean instead of the outpatient?
The atypical.
The atypical. Yeah, it would be. If we can start a female band,
I know.
A female version of the outpatients, call us the atypicals. But anyway, you know, we don't have a lot of the side We still have side effects. I mean, of course, medication's always going to have side effects, even anything you take.
You just listen to the TV with all these different medications.
Yeah.
Have you experienced some swelling? You know, heart attacks.
Yeah,
or,
that's
strokes.
True. You see Abilify on TV now, and you're like, whoa.
Yeah.
Blood clots.
But, you know, there's a lot of medication, but we have to think of the good that it does. You know, you stop people from hearing voices. You stop people from going into these drastic mood swings. You stop that kind of behavior.
Mental health conditions. That used to take people's lives away from them very effectively.
And that's what we don't want to do. We don't want to take people out of the community. We want to keep people in with their families. We want to keep people in the community.
Able to have meaningful lives.
Exactly, and that's exactly what our goal is. And not to put them in state hospitals, not to put them away. You know, we don't want to do that. That's so old school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, make them be functional parts of the community. You know. With their family. You know, if you go to a state hospital or even if you go to a hospital, closest psychiatric hospital for this county is in San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a two-hour drive, and a lot of people don't have the transportation to get up there and visit their loved ones. Thank goodness we have, you know, everybody has a cell phone nowadays so that they can at least call, but, you know, to visit, which is very helpful in the recovery process, in the healing process, is to have their family
yeah.
around and not to have people be able to visit. That's very difficult. And sometimes if we have to go to state hospital, I mean, that's in Norwalk for us. That's in the Los Angeles area. So, you know, that's even further away. We don't want to do that.
So we do everything we can to
yeah.
stabilize
oh, yeah.
people locally and keep them local
yes.
and provide them the level of care they
so
need
it,
to manage
yeah.
their lives.
That's why we have so many yeah. clinics, so that we have easy access for people. We have all these different programs. We have case managers. We have doctors. We have nurses. We have, you know, a good supply of people that are very knowledgeable. I mean, all our staff is knowledgeable. All our staff, you know, wants to help people to keep them in society, not in society, but in their homes, in their communities. I mean, we try to have as many, you know, give the people as many resources and look for different kinds of funding, look for different kinds of programs. You know, mental health is very innovative in those kind of areas. And we've come a long, long way, you know.
You guys are like saving
yeah.
us money, huh?
I know.
Well,
it's expensive to warehouse people
oh, yeah.
also, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, it is. It is. I mean, hospital is you know, a Medi-Cal rate of a hospital is $500 plus a day. So that's expensive. So we would rather.
And Medi-Cal is like really high paying, right? No.
Not in California.
So that's the least it could ever cost.
Yes.
You know, it could cost
yeah.
a lot more if somebody actually had, you know, different
private
types
insurance
of insurance
or
no
insurance.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, our goal, and like I said, mental health has, or behavioral health has been very innovative in getting a lot of programs to help people. And that's what we're doing.
So walk us through the process if somebody comes in a crisis.
If somebody comes in a crisis, what we call a crisis is a person that's brought in on an involuntary detention. In other words, they were so much in danger of hurting themselves, hurting somebody else, or due to their mental disorder, they could not provide for their food, clothing, and shelter. They're brought in on an involuntary detention by law enforcement, sheriff's office, police department.
Involuntary means they didn't get a vote.
They
didn't get a vote.
Because everything else, I mean, when they come in through the front door, That's voluntary. Yes. That's voluntary.
And they get to, and so.
Even if they're brought in by relatives, that's.
That's a voluntary. So
they always say, no, I don't want this.
Yeah, exactly.
Does law enforcement kind of keep their eyes open for people who, in the course of their normal preserve and protect or duties, they appear to meet this yes. level of need?
Yes, or the family can call in.
So if they're called in on a disturbance, quote-unquote disturbance, then they're kind of also aware that this may be a mental health crisis?
Yes, and then they bring them in on an involuntary detention.
So to clarify that, let's say that, you know, like you said, the family can call in. Let's say that the family, you know, they have a loved one and they're showing signs of psychotic, you know, right, it's the first one, especially I'm thinking about young kids, and they bring them in, and you know what, can you hold them, or does it have to be by a police officer?
If it's a minor, the parents have the ability to consent for treatment, so that's kind of an involuntary detention for the minor, but it's still voluntary. But if they are an adult, once they turn 18, it's a different story. They have their own rights. So
they can't put, family members can't put them on a 5150.
No, family members cannot. Family members can initiate the 5150 by calling law enforcement.
The best thing is, if there's a family, listeners are out there, they have a family member, best thing is to call law enforcement.
And I'm sure that this is going to be a very difficult call because nobody wants to call on their family member. Mm-hmm. But if they can't get them in for help, that's one way to get them in.
And there's a fairly high bar. I mean, you know, we kind of set the bar at a level where people can be fairly odd, but as long as they're not really in immediate danger to themselves because of their mental health condition, you cannot revoke their rights to choose what they do.
Exactly. If they're hearing voices and things like that, they can't be brought in on a hold, but if they're hearing voices telling them to hurt themselves and they're acting out.
Or other people or something.
And or others, and they're acting out on that behavior, then yes, because they become, like Scott said, an imminent danger to themselves or to others.
Or if they're so distracted that they stop eating or drinking.
That's
or
a danger to themselves, yeah. Exactly. And so then they can be brought in on an involuntary detention. And once they're brought in on an involuntary detention on a 5150, then what happens is that our psychologist evaluates them. If he feels that they need further care, then the psychiatrist evaluates them. And then if they feel that they need even further care, then we will send them to a hospital up in San Diego. Now, while they're at the crisis desk, they're always being supervised. They're not there by themselves. We don't lock people up. We don't have straitjackets. Mm-hmm. We don't have anything like that. So get away from that state hospital kind of thinking. And so there's always somebody there with them. They're always being supervised. And then from there, we take them to be medically cleared if they need to go to a hospital in San Diego just to make sure that everything's okay, their body systems are fine. And like I said, our staff is there also with them until they leave for the hospital in San Diego. And then once they're in San Diego in a hospital, our staff, our case managers, our mental health rehab techs are calling because our purpose is to get them out of the hospital and get them back into the community or get them the resources they need so that this situation doesn't happen again.
How long can they stay in the hospital? You know,
well, if they go in on a 5150, if they go in on a 5150, it's the minimum of 3 days because of the fact that it's a 72-hour hold. So they go in, and then after that, they can sign in as a voluntary client. Like they think, yeah, you know what, this is really doing me some good. I need to sign in, and they can be there for any amount of time. If for some reason they still are not clearing up after the 72-hour hold, the doctor can extend it, and then we start going into conservatorship and that kind
but,
of thing.
But hospitals are thought like of as triage units, though. Stabilization and return.
Yes.
They don't really consider themselves.
No. If it's long-term care, we have other facilities that we put people, you know, that we refer people to. And they go to those facilities for longer term care, but then we're talking more.
And this is because you know that the laws changed, right?
Yes.
I mean, before people could stay in state hospitals for the rest of their lives, being locked up.
It was warehoused.
And now you know, after 72 hours, and you know, the person can just say, you know, that's it, I'm done.
As long as they're not in imminent danger to themselves.
But if they're okay, they've been stabilized.
Yeah, and as long as the hospital feels after they've expired their 72-hour holds, if they're not in imminent danger, then they can leave. If they are still in imminent danger, the doctor can extend the hold to 14 days. So it can be extended if they're in imminent danger. If they're not,
well, the reason why I'm asking is because there's people who, like, if they have schizophrenia and they don't want to take their medication. You know, they get stabilized at the state hospital, and then they get released. And, you know, I know they're given medication, but then they don't want to take it. And that's something that people need to understand, that it's voluntary.
Well,
if they're not at risk, you know, at danger to themselves or others.
The hospitals in San Diego are very different than the state hospitals. The hospitals in San Diego, to get into a state hospital, you have to be under conservatorship. They won't let you in the door until that's done. To get into the hospitals in San Diego, that doesn't take any kind of conservatorship or anything like that. That's just a 72-hour hold.
And that's
it's
it.
When, yeah, that's what that is. And yeah, after 72 hours, if they are not in imminent danger, then yeah.
Because I hear a lot from family members, you know, what can we do? What can we do? They don't want to take the medication. What can we do?
Yeah, and as long as, like, I go back to they're not, I mean, it's not against the law to hear voices. I mean, we see a lot of people in our town, or in this town, that are walking around hearing voices.
Isn't there any way we can force them to take their medication?
not unless there's some kind of legal, hold on them, then we cannot, because they have their rights.
Well, no, it's like the whole teenager thing. You can't get a teenager to clean their room. However, if you say, well, you know, you want money for the movies, you know, you want, like hamburger for dinner or whatever, I'm cool with that. Keep your room clean.
Yeah.
You know, it's we're back to human negotiations again as family members.
Yeah.
We're always negotiating with people, trying to find ways to coexist. You know, so.
So anyway,
wheel and deal.
I'm trying to do that with my 4-year. It doesn't work very well.
Yeah, already. It starts young.
It starts young.
337-8874 is the phone number. We're here with Pat Arevalo. She's the program supervisor for the Crisis Assessment Unit. And we're talking all things front doorish about behavioral health today. How many crisis calls or crisis interactions do you guys get on an average day?
You know, for some days it can just really be busy. And
there's no average day.
So there's not truth on the weekends or
full moon.
You know, I was
common misconceptions.
I was on the show yesterday and we were talking with Berta and Raquel and we were talking about Saturdays, that it tends to be the day that people have breakup issues, and you know, girls take more than a few pills and sometimes are drinking. It seems like that happens a lot on Saturdays for some reason. I don't know. It's just that's the way it is. But we don't really have an average day. I mean, sometimes it's feast or famine around there. Mm-hmm. There's been days when we haven't had anybody for like a couple of days.
You can have quiet Saturdays.
Yeah. And up until like, you know, 12, 1 o'clock in the morning, then it starts getting busy.
After people have had a couple of drinks.
Yeah. Uh-huh. After they've been out.
It's I grew up in the Rust. I grew up in automobile manufacturing land.
Uh-huh.
And our rule was, before we ever bought a car, was if it was an American-made car, was to never buy a car that was manufactured on a Friday because people were getting paid and leaving their workstations, or on a Monday after payday because people were generally in kind of impaired conditions in terms of manufacturing.
Yeah, you know, I read that one time. I read, and there was something on the VIN number where you could tell the day it was manufactured.
Yes, exactly,
or something.
Exactly.
Like that. I don't remember now, but yeah, I guess I should
how does it cross over to behavioral health?
So with behavioral health, Saturday nights are usually kind of busy, especially in the wee hours of the morning. We get a lot of people that
substance-fueled or what? I mean, it sounds like substance-fueled.
Mostly alcohol. Yeah. And that's, you know, for the most part, that's what happens. That's what we get on Saturdays. You know, we have any number of things happen. People, because of the alcohol intoxication, will get suicidal and
violent. They get violent.
The whole, you know, like insight through drinking, you know,
veritas.
It's like, oh, I just am drinking now. I realize how messed up my life is, or
then I'm more
or is
depressed.
It just the intoxication thing.
Where they have, like, they have no inhibitions and they're like, let's do something dumb. Trying to get some attention
from the next unthought out thing.
Yeah. So, But it's, you know, we get a lot of people that the most type of people that we get are people that are dangerous to themselves. That's for the most part, that's what we get.
That's kind of reassuring, I suppose.
Yeah. And we don't get a lot of people that's called gravely disabled. That means that as a result of their mental disorder, they're not able to provide for their food, clothing, and shelter. We get mostly the people that are dangerous to themselves. And I would say we probably have maybe 3 to 4 people a day that come into crisis. Sometimes we've had a full house. Sometimes we have 6 or 7 people in a day. It just all depends on the time of the month and the moon sometimes. Sometimes I look out and I'm thinking, oh, my God, it's a full moon, you know, and people don't think that happens, but sometimes it does. I mean, we've had full moons where we've had like 7 people come in one day, and
wow.
That's a lot for us. We don't usually get that many people.
So,
and luckily, a lot of them get to go home. They don't all get hospitalized.
Well,
okay.
If you think about it, I mean, let's go back and do the math. You got, let's say, 4 people per day. It's kind of a rounded off figure. 365 days a year. So you're already looking at like 1,300-1,400 people in our community every year who have a dangerous enough mental health thing going on that crisis is an apt response to that in our community. And again, we're looking at something that taxpayers pay for, and we're wondering what it does for our community. Well, you've got 1,400 people whose lives were so distressed in that moment that they met this fairly high bar for danger to self or others or unable to care for themselves that they required in our legal system this type of response. That's pretty impressive. I mean, when we think about it, that may be worth the money.
No, and when you think about it, too, behavioral health is the only one.
Yeah, and plus another thing, think of what we're preventing. You know, if this person is brought to a place where they're safe, and sometimes, I mean, we hospitalize on an average probably about 20 people a month. So out of that big chunk of people that come in,
you're able to stabilize,
treat, get them the interventions that they need, maybe start them on medication so that we don't have to send them to San Diego to a hospital, so that we can keep them in the community and they mm-hmm. can stay with their family members.
And for those 20 people who really needed that additional level of care, it's there.
It's there.
And it's arranged and it's safe. And
yeah.
They're not hitchhiking to San Diego. They're getting a safe transportation to San Diego.
Yeah, they are. And we're with them every step of the way. You know, and we make the arrangements. We don't have family members make arrangements. We do all of that.
Transportation.
And you
everything.
Don't just leave them in the hospital and walk away?
No, definitely not. We have the mental health rehab techs that follow them through the hospitalization so that they're making daily contacts with the social workers from the hospital so that they can come back to mm-hmm. their community, or if for some reason they can't come back to their home, to find them alternate housing. We have a TESS program, which is a Transitional Engagement Supportive Services program, and that program is for people that are new to our system to help them get them back into the community. Or if for some reason, say they have loved ones in Phoenix or in, you know, another area, to help them get back to that family member. So we don't just, you know, get them trying to get them back down here. If we have to connect them to a family member in another area, we do.
No.
For those that are 20, that are average, that get hospitalized, are those people that same people going back into the hospital, or is it mostly brand new people?
We should be proud of ourselves. It's mostly new people.
Oh,
so that we don't have a lot of
revolving door.
Yeah, we don't have a lot of people coming back in our system. Yes, we do. We do have
There's a couple,
but for the most part, these are new people coming into our system. People that are newly identified with mental health.
And that's where the TESS comes in to help all those
people. And then what also the TESS program does, they help plug them into our system, into our mental health system. Get them into the intake, you know, if they're having issues with housing and just getting into community resources, because the Valley has limited resources, but we do have resources. And a lot of times it's difficult for people who don't know our area to find these resources.
Well, especially when there's lots of distress.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're not thinking clearly, just like Scott said, you know. So, it's difficult, so, you know. But anyway, we digress.
I digress.
Because
you said not thinking clearly, and I looked at the clock, and it's like, oh, that's right, I did have a meeting right now. So,
bye-bye, Scott.
Well, thank
you. See
you
guys next week. Have a great show.
Thank you, Scott. So, Maria and I will continue.
Oh, yes, that's our problem.
We'll just keep chatting away.
Anyway. But no, that's good about that. You know, you... You help those people, you know, get linked to the test, which is another part. They're there too, right?
Yes.
In the area, the assessment center, and where the assessment center. They're
yes.
in the same area.
We're in the first floor three-story building. Yeah, and we're all there, and you know, we all work as one big happy team, mm-hmm. and because we're working for the patient.
It's like a triage right there. Yeah. That just. You know, you go in, you know, maybe as a walk-in, and maybe you need more services, and, you know, you get link them into the other clinics, or if you have a crisis, a brand-new person, you have the mental health rehab technician that follows them to the hospital, they come out, there's a test program.
And the good thing is that test is there, so if they're coming right out of crisis, we can walk them two steps over and say, hey, listen, these are the test case managers, and so these are the people that are going to be helping you out. So it helps to connect a face to a name, not just here's a card and, you know, somebody's going to call you. No, when they leave crisis, they leave there with an appointment. They leave knowing that somebody's going to be calling them, not just, yeah, we'll give you a call.
Well, I mean, it's even going into crisis. For somebody going into crisis, they went through that episode that's very hard for them. They get stabilized, and now they said, okay, bye.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and you want them to feel tied to behavioral
even
health.
Even with that, for family members too, they see that the loved one has been taken care of. And then their services.
And one thing that we do there at Crisis is that we always have, you know, when the client walks in, we ask for releases of information so that we can talk to family members. So our first thing is when we're doing our original crisis intervention, when we're doing our original paperwork with the client, we are trying to get the family to you know, find out if family is involved, first off. Maybe they're transient through this area. But to get the family involved, let the family know, granted, we do request release of information for the adults because, you know, it's all confidential. And so we want to make sure that we can plug them back in with their family and or see if the family's going to want to take them back, which is, mm-hmm. you know, one of our decision-making, part of our decision-making tree, because if they have no family member, nobody to help support them, they're homeless, then that would be a big factor in us sending them home.
Yeah, and I've heard some of the cases that, you know, we get a lot of, I guess, transient
yes,
people through here. And, you know, somebody came in and the program was able to contact, siblings up north in California and linking them back because they had nobody else here. And so they were a transient. And that worked out well. And
it's true. A lot of times we have people that have wandered into our area. And
of all places.
Yeah, you know.
I mean,
you
it's not
have.
The greatest. Not in the summertime.
And they've wandered into this area, and our area there has been instrumental in linking them back. You know, they've been lost. To their family. They're John Doe's and things like that. And you know, our staff has helped link them back. One of our clerical support, Teresa, the other day saw somebody that, you know, they had a picture of them. And the family member came in. You know, they were sending out pictures to everybody to see, do you know this person? You know, we got some pictures on our fax. And a family member came in and they said, does this look like your, you know, family member? And the guy was, yeah, that's my, I think it was his nephew or something. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that was linked back. I mean, granted, they weren't at crisis. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we helped link them back. A lot of times we have people that wander away, you know, people that have, they're starting with early stages of Alzheimer's. They have some dementia going on, and they get in their car, and they just drive down here, and they run out of gas. You
wow.
know, out in a remote area, and the sheriff's department picks them up, brings them into us, and they're not really danger to themselves because of their mental disorder, but because of the dementia that's going on with them, and you know, to try and stabilize them, mm-hmm. and to try and link them back so that the family can come down, get them, or you know, whatever we need to do to get them back to their family members, or even send them to a hospital so that they can be linked back to family.
You know, driving around here in the valley, I see people who are homeless, and I wonder how many of those have loved ones somewhere looking for them.
Yeah, yeah.
kind of those, and a lot of them are mentally ill.
Yeah. And we get a lot of people who, you know, go from area to area. They're transients, and they happen to, you know, to mentally break down in our area. And so, you know, sometimes it's just a question of calling family, and yeah, you know, we want our family member back, we want our loved one back, and oh, we've been looking for them for the last 2 years or something like that. I mean, we had one that we linked back, and you know, after they had gotten stabilized, unfortunately, sometimes when people come into our services, they're not in their right mind. They don't, they can't give us any information because
like
they're
said
so
earlier,
psychotic.
Exactly.
And so, you know, once they go to the hospital and once they get stabilized, they get on the medication, they're able to say, yeah, I'm from Utah, or I'm from here, I'm from there. And then they're able to give us, you know, family members' names or numbers and stuff like that, because a lot of times numbers just aren't, you know, something that flows through their mind so that we can link them back right then and there.
And then it must be hard if they've been gone for a while.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of people are getting off track. You know, a lot of people don't have landlines anymore at their homes. They just have cell phones.
Yeah. And then to try and get on yellowpages.com, which is one thing I use a lot, is they, like you said, if they don't have a landline, it doesn't exist because there's not a cellphone.com, you know, where you can look up people through their cell phones.
I know. It's hard. Maybe you need to start doing that.
Hey, yeah. Never know. Something. It's our new endeavor, Maria.
Well, just let's give that information again. Address and phone number.
Our crisis desk and our assessment center are located at 202 North 8th Street, and we're at the corner of 8th and Broadway in the three-story building. And our toll-free number is 1-800-817-5292. And that line is open 24/7, so people can call, and if they need to talk and maybe just kind of help themselves cope with their daily issues, we're there.
Well, thank you so much, Patricia, for coming and giving us information on the assessment center, on the crisis, and the services that Behavioral Health provides. Again, you know, it's family members that can have any questions, or them themselves are feeling, you know, going through a crisis, or they just want to talk. They can always go to the assessment center, get a pre-screening.
And a family member can also come in to get information. I mean,
yes.
that's a really good thing that you mentioned.
And, of course, if they miss any information, they can always access the show through the podcast. And also we can go, they can access the information on the Internet, too.
Yeah, our network,
on the network of care.
Network
of care, and you're going through Imperial County.
Okay.
So they get information. Well, thank you again.
Thank you.
And just really quick, this weekend, Saturday, Buckland Park, Children's Annual Fair. That's being offered by the Children's CAP Council. So it's going to be there in the morning. They have a lot of activities for kids. Last year, I think 2 years ago, I went and they had animals there and they have a train. It's going to be a lot of fun. So it's a really family-oriented activities for kids, for the whole family. And, of course, food. There's going to be food there. So this Saturday at the Buckland Park, Children's Annual Children's Fair. Okay. So, if you need information, you can always contact the CAP Council. And, again, thank you, Patricia, for coming.
Well, thank you for
our listeners to listening to our radio show. And we'll be here next week at the same time at Let's Talk About It. And, of course, our phone number is 337-8874. And have a good weekend. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Let's Talk About It, heard each Thursday morning at 7:30 a.m. on KUBO 88.7 FM, Radio Bilingue. Presented by Imperial County Behavioral Health Services and brought to you as a podcast by KXORadio.com.